FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's November 29th, 2016. We're almost 3 weeks past the election. And, well, things are developing pretty quickly. But one thing is very obvious, and that is the useful idiots in the media have lost their usefulness. And with us to discuss this state of affairs is Chip Lake. You're probably familiar with him. Chip, you've been involved in PR and campaigns and in the political process for a long time. So on that note, welcome back.
Kerry, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be back.
Hey, so we're looking at the results of the election. I mean, the recount barely even merits a comment because it's meaningless. Nothing is going to come of it. It's obvious. So, but we've got a situation here where the media is still overly hostile to Trump, going out of their way to make him look bad at every turn. And how much of this is he going to take?
Well, it's a good question, Kerry. I think he's already kind of shown his hand a little bit in kind of how he ran his campaign and conducted himself during the campaign. And since he's become president-elect of the United States, we've already seen a little bit of a, I don't know what we want to call it, a schism, I guess, between members of the White House press corps, of which he's not the president yet. He doesn't get sworn in until the 19th of January. But, you know, if you recall, about a week before Thanksgiving, he and his family decided at the end of one day to go out for a steak. And the press went nuts that they did not alert them of such movements of the principal. And I guess in the past, that's protocol that you do that. But I got a feeling, Kerry, that there will be different protocols in this White House than in previous White Houses. And the press is just going to have to get used to it.
Yeah, well, they're not exactly the most adaptable lot.
No.
Are they?
No. No.
And there's a new sheriff in town and they're still in denial over it. They're really just, they just can't deal with it. They're in extreme pronounced meltdown mode here.
No question. And, you know, they need to do some soul searching themselves to determine, you know, where do we go from here from a media perspective? As we talked about the last time we were on, and as we were talking about beforehand, there's so many different ways in 2016 for people like you and me to get news outside of mainstream media, right? And who even knows what mainstream media is nowadays? I mean, you know, when I was growing up, it was, you know, it was NBC, CBS, and ABC. Right. It was the network stations. Well, correct. You know what? Times have changed, and that's not the case anymore. So, you know, I think we could see this president be the first president, not only in modern times, but the first president ever to not have a daily briefing every day of the week. People don't realize, but the press secretary of the president always gives a daily briefing Monday through Friday. I don't know why we do that. I don't know why that is traditionally done, but I don't think you're going to see that. And the press will whine about it and complain about it. And then I think you're going to see Donald Trump take his message directly to the people in YouTube messages like he's done twice since his election. And why not? Because that's the most raw way to get your message out to people, because even though the press won't like it, they have to cover it.
Yeah. What choice do they have if they want to remain at least somewhat relevant?
That's right.
They're really not the mainstream media anymore. They're the legacy media.
That's right. I think that's exactly right. And I think there's a lot of people within that space, and rightfully so, Kerry, that are evaluating how, you know, how the space has changed, and also how they covered this election. I mean, when I did campaigns and elections, at the end of every election, whether my client won or lost, I would always do an evaluation on what we did right and what we did wrong. And that was always a brutal assessment, right? Mm-hmm. And the press has to go through that same exercise now. At least they should. I know some of them are, and I don't know that they'll come out with the right conclusions from that exercise. But, you know, Donald Trump might have changed the way presidential campaigns are covered in perpetuity. We won't know until the next one, but he right. could possibly have kind of changed that, how that discourse goes and how that back and forth goes as well.
It's very likely that he has. And, you know, it's not just the press that needs to do the soul searching. It's the Democratic Party.
Sure.
They need to understand why they lost here. And
no question.
Just by repeating the mantra, but Hillary won the popular vote, isn't right. going to work for them. Because, look, what are they doing? They were talking about Howard Dean heading up the Democratic Party, the DNC, and between him and yeah, Ellison, of all people, which shows they didn't learn anything.
And they're about to reelect Nancy Pelosi as their leader in the House. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what is it? The definition of stupidity is, making the same mistake over and over and over again. And that's exactly where they are. Look, they were arrogant, completely arrogant about their turnout operation. And they were arrogant about the math of demographics. And, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't work out well for them because their turnout modeling was wrong. And Donald Trump did not get a smaller percentage of Hispanic voters and African-American voters than Romney got. To the contrary, he got 4 points better with African-American voters, and he was 2 points better with Hispanics. And while that might not seem like a lot, when you turn out rural America votes and you're turning out votes in the Rust Belt states like he turned out, it was just a coalition that, looking back at it from a statistical perspective, it made a lot of sense. And it was a coalition that they just couldn't compete with. But, they didn't know it until around probably about 9:15, 9:30 on election night.
Well, they might have known a little bit earlier than that because they did cancel the fireworks, the victory fireworks display in New York City 3 days early. I wonder who was responsible for that.
Interesting. I did not know that. And the glass ceiling PR stunt didn't work either. They found a ballroom in Manhattan that had a glass ceiling, and that's where Hillary decided she wanted to be. And the irony of that is she never made an appearance in that room the entire night and didn't end up giving a speech until I think 12:30 or 1 o'clock the following day at a different hotel.
And of course, you heard that she had a little bit of a fit, throwing stuff and attacking her aides and cursing and screaming and just.
Oh, yeah. Really, oh, yeah. Temper tantrum, you know, like all the millennials that went out and protested the results of the election. Those were all the people that probably didn't vote. And, somebody, I forgot who it was, put on Twitter, you know, I certainly don't hope we don't have to depend on this generation to storm Normandy for our country because what's there to protest? It was you lost.
Yeah.
And you lost fair and square. And, it's just it's a new era, Kerry. The today's generation is growing up in a different era than we grew up in.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there was a survey taken of them, a poll post-election. And they said if they were just the only ones voting, the millennials, Trump would have gotten 32 electoral votes.
Yeah, that's right.
Crazy.
It is.
What?
It's insane.
What safe space are they inhabiting here? I don't get it.
No, that's right. And I tell you, you had mentioned you're down in Florida. I tell you, when I knew that this might happen, when the Volusia County, Florida numbers came in, which is the Daytona Beach area, and I saw that Donald Trump had won that county by 11.5 points, in which Romney only won by 2 points. At that point, you realize there's something going on outside of these metropolitan urban areas that is real. And it's rural America feeling like they have been ignored, and they have been ignored over the last 8 years, maybe even longer than that, coming out and making a statement. When I saw the Volusia County numbers came in, I said, wow, this could happen, because Trump needed to win Florida to make it work. They knew that.
Yes.
They didn't feel great with the early voting turnout, but they knew it was going to be competitive. But when some of those rural counties started coming in, it looked really good. And then the Rust Belt states followed. And then at that point, it didn't matter what Nevada did, because there was going to be enough. There was going to be enough momentum in the Rust Belt states to make sure that Hillary couldn't get to 270.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, it was an amazing night, and just watching it all happen, I was not surprised in the least. It was what I was expecting all along.
You did. You called it when we were on.
Yeah.
You called it when we were on, and I think the title of our last podcast was "Expect the Unexpected."
Yes, that
and,
was it.
So that. That was very good foreshadowing for what was to come, Kerry. Well played.
Well, you know, I just knew that those states, the Midwest states, had spent a lot of time in Wisconsin, et cetera. And Ohio, I've been through a number of times, and I just knew they were not happy with the state of affairs. And then when I saw a little inside baseball here, but basically the National Party co-opted the state party in Ohio, which meant that Kasich basically was cut off. There was nothing that he could do to stand in the way of this. Then it was obvious to me what was going to unfold. And, and then Wisconsin, you know, Reince Priebus, I credit him single-handedly for Trump's victory here, because without him, I don't know that Wisconsin would have even been possible. And the other Midwestern states. So Reince, whatever the past, whatever he might have done in the past, mistakes that he made, alliances that he made, he burned all bridges, and he went totally all in for Trump, which
he did.
And so he got a good position there. But I got to believe that he also bought into the Trump agenda as well.
No question. Yeah, no question. I mean, he was catching a lot of heat from within the committee. And the committee, look, the RNC, it's 165 people. Mm. It's three people from each state and three people from each of the territories. And so the state chairman gets a seat on the committee, and then each state and territory has a national committee man and a national committee woman. Right. So there's some diversity of genders. And in large part, Kerry, these aren't people who you would go to win an election, right? I mean, they're longtime party stalwarts who have showed up to the precinct meetings and the caucuses. Not all of them. I mean, some of them are very smart, capable people, but a lot of them are more concerned with what the centerpieces look like at the rubber chicken dinners than they are about winning elections. And I think Reince realized, look, my job as the RNC chairman is to do everything I can for the nominee. And he took a lot of heat because some people said, well, he's not one of us. He's not this. And Reince said, that's BS. I'm the Republican National Committee Chairman, and I think he did buy into it. When he got to see Donald Trump, he got to watch him work. He got to know him a little bit better than he did, you know, during the crowded process. And let me say one more thing, too, and then I'll shut up. One more thing about the Electoral College and the popular vote. I honestly believe that if we elected presidents based upon the popular vote, Trump would have won the popular vote. And the reason I say that is because they put their whole campaign together knowing they had to get to 270 electoral votes. So they didn't spend any money in these states that were overwhelmingly going to go Democrat. They didn't spend a dime in California. They didn't spend any money in New York. That's where he's from.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is the popular vote was won by Hillary Clinton, yes, but that's not how we elect our president. If the rules 12 months out were, okay, we're going to elect our president now by popular vote, the Trump team and the RNC would have changed their strategy. They would have diverted their resources. They would have allocated them in different areas, and they would have had more people come out to the polls than voted for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
But that's not how we elect our president. So it is kind of fascinating to kind of listen to the Democratic electoral vote argument, because as I tell my friends on the other side, you guys would have lost that too if everybody knew that was
a beauty contest.
That was the trophy.
Hey, look, I know people in California who aren't even registered to vote because really, what's the point? And New York,
exactly,
pro-Trump people, a goodly number of them. And it's like, it's so overwhelmingly Democratic here. Why would I bother even engaging in the process?
No question.
When you have these, and you know, all through these states that overwhelming, but the converse could be said about Hillary as well. But I just think those pro-Hillary people showed up no matter where they were. There just weren't enough of them.
There weren't enough of them. And I tell you, the biggest argument, I've always in the past been a proponent of national popular vote. Let me tell you why I have a concern about it now. Not because of this inverse dynamic, but because Hillary Clinton's margin in the electoral vote and the in the popular vote increased by 180,000 votes yesterday. Now think about that for a second.
Yeah.
It's November 29th. Thanksgiving's in our rearview mirror, and California just found 180,000 votes for Hillary Clinton. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people are, you know, that only works if people have confidence in how these states count votes. In Georgia, our elections were certified 2 weeks ago. We were done counting votes on the Monday after the election. So I don't know why in California they're still counting votes, but you know, it's stuff like that that don't give people the confidence in a true national election.
Totally. Could not agree with you more. And so we look now at his appointments, the quality of those appointments or lack thereof. I mean, what are you taking away from who he's appointed so far?
I'm very pleased with what he's done so far. The most recent appointment with Tom Price of HHS. Tom used to be a client of mine, Kerry. I did his race when he first ran for Congress in 2004. Mm. I can tell you, I know Tom very well. He's very smart. He's very strategic. He's a bulldog. He's a fighter. You know, he always kind of viewed himself as a doctor in a lawyer's profession. And so, you know, because there's more lawyers in Congress than any other profession.
Oh, God.
So, you know, he started the largest orthopedic surgery practice that in the country, Resurgence Orthopedics, which he no longer has a financial stake in. But so but before he was a businessman, he was a surgeon. Then he became a businessman. Then he became a member of Congress. And now he's HHS secretary. And I think all of his life's experiences have put him in this position to be the guy that is kind of the head coach for dismantling, repealing, and replacing Obamacare. So I think that's great. I'm extremely happy with Betsy DeVos as education secretary.
Right.
I think that's a bold, bold move because, you know, DeVos is big on the education reform issue. That's really going to make the unions mad. The big question, I guess, I mean, Jeff Sessions is attorney general. Phenomenal pick. No question about it. Mike Pompeo is CIA director. You're not going to get anybody smarter. And Mike, you know, Mike's a scrapper. He's a street fighter.
Yeah.
So I think he kind of fits that mold. The big question is, what does he do with the Secretary of State position? I'd be shocked if he picks Mitt Romney personally.
Same.
You know, I know he's got dinner with him tonight. You know, but you know, I'm a firm believer, Kerry, that elections have consequences.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think if he, you know, I agree with Kellyanne Conway. If he appoints Mitt Romney to that position, then, you know, I don't know that it sends the best message. I don't think Trump will make that call. I think he's I think he's being very deliberative about that pick, but yes. I think there's probably a pretty good chance David Petraeus gets it, and I think he'd be a phenomenal choice for that position.
Agreed. He is a diplomat in military clothing, if you will.
No question.
What he did in Iraq, bringing all those disparate groups together who wanted to kill each other. And, you know, let's forget about what happened after Trump left, because that's just, I mean, after Bush left and Obama came in, that was just a tragedy. Unnecessary. Yeah.
Petraeus is a soldier.
Exactly.
And I can't think of a higher compliment for somebody to serve as Secretary of State.
Agreed. So wonder who his press secretary is going to be. I've heard rumors of Monica Crowley now. Probably not a bad pick.
Monica Crowley wouldn't be a bad pick. Obviously, Laura Ingraham's name has been mentioned around. I think they would certainly like to have Laura Ingraham, although I hear she has told the transition team that she would only consider such a move if she could have an expanded role in the administration and not just press secretary.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's going to work. I tell you a dark horse, so I think it's probably a safe pick. It's Jason Miller.
Absolutely.
You know, Jason, I think Jason's down there close to you in Florida, or at least he has been.
We like Jason.
In Tampa area. And you know, Jason was on You know, new day this morning with Chris Cuomo, and he handles himself very well and and is a very good advocate on behalf of his boss. So I'm rooting for Jason. I know Jason, he's a friend, and I'm very happy for him. And that's kind of my dark horse pick for press secretary. If they're not able to persuade Monica Crowley or Laura Ingraham to take such a position.
Agreed. Well, it's really shaping up to be an interesting story here, Chip, but people want to find out more about you. Check out your work, what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's the best place to go.
I appreciate it, Kerry. I do a sports podcast, so they can follow me there if they have any interest in sports at redzonesports.com or blogtalkradio.com/redzonesports. They can follow me on Twitter at Lake, L-A-K-E, Chip. And then my business website is twinoaksconnect.com. So I'm in a lot of different places. I'll have a new website that we're rolling out in January at chiplake.com, and that'll have everything housed in one place. But right now, I would urge everybody to follow me on Twitter. Try to stay pretty active on there with a good mix of sports and politics and current events as well.
All right. We'll have a link to your website on financialsurvivalnetwork.com in the show notes, like we always do for all of our guests. Have any comments, criticisms, feedback, whatever, kl@kerrylutz.com, kl@kerrylutz.com, or you can click the contact tab on top of financialsurvivalnetwork.com, Twitter feed @kerrylutz, and check out our Facebook page, which is Financial Survival Network. Pretty active there. Hey, Chip, it's always a pleasure having you on.
Thanks for having me, Kerry. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll talk in a couple months and see how this thing is progressing. All right.
I look forward to it, Kerry. Thanks again for having me on.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.